This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Welcome, everyone, to yet another episode of Diagnosing the Aftermarket A to Z. I'm Matt Fonzel, and let me tell you something you already know. The world ain't all sunshine and rainbows. It's a mean and nasty place, and I don't care how tough you are, it will beat you to your knees and keep you there permanently if you let it. You, me, or nobody is going to hit as hard as life. But it ain't about how hard you hit. It's about how hard you can get hit and keep moving forward. How much you can take and keep moving forward. That's how winning's done. That and more after a word from our sponsor, Napa Auto Tech Training. So, are you looking for the right training provider that offers cutting-edge courses to hone your automotive skills? Well, let Napa Auto Tech take you to the next level. Go to NapaAutoTech.com for more details about classes near you. So, I got an idea for this episode from Jason Elliott. So, Jason, thank you for the email and the idea about going over the Wrenchway Voice of the Technician Survey Report for 2025. I guess one thing I'd like to point out right off the bat is, as surveys go, this had a pretty good turnout with just over 4,700 respondents. But, I mean, come on. We're going to see that the data could be a little skewed, and this is not a dig against Wrenchway at all. It's more of us have to participate. So I guess right off the bat, I would highly suggest you go to Wrenchway, whether start following it or kind of register with them, somehow get involved so that when the next survey comes around, you can take it and get your voice in there. And not to be cliche about having your voice heard and all that, but the more data, the better. As we get into this, you'll probably see why I say that. But yeah, this is a good thing to get involved with because really all it is information. Information for us, information for the leaders in our profession, shop owners, managers, they need to see this stuff and they need to get accurate data. And accurate data means trying to get as much of the demographic as possible. The reason I bring that up is 4,700 doesn't seem like such a bad number until just consider the fact that at least according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, there's almost 800,000 technicians out there. Now, that's by varying levels, if you will. And we just need as many as we can, as wide of the demographic as we can, representing as much of the, like even the geographic U.S. as possible, every level, entry level, all the way up to experienced master tech, whatever you want to call it, master installer, master diagnostician, you know, just as much as we can get on there, right? Mechanical specialist, technical specialist, you name it. We need them all in there reporting their information. And we'll get into that. I just thought it was important to bring up that 4,700 is impressive. It really is. But in the grand scheme of things, that's hardly a scratch. The vast majority of respondents to the survey was automotive technicians. Other respondents were instructors, managers, owners. Instructors made up about 20%. Management owners made up about 14%. 6% were students. Only 1% from collision. So a body collision repair. I don't know. I could see it both ways. Wanting to keep them a little bit separate, maybe having a separate survey for them. I can see the logic in that. I guess some of the key things I see here is also the overwhelming respondents had 21 plus years in the profession. They made up 62%. So that's not enough of the entry level, middle, you know, they've only been in it for 10 years. We need way more input from them. Geographically, it looks pretty heavy responses from the East and even the Midwest, East Central. That got some pretty decent coverage, and it just starts to go a little more sparse as you go west until, of course, you get into the closer to the coast, and then it picks up again. So we really need more input from middle America, if you will, and the, you know, just west central United States. And that's all the way going from Montana, North Dakota, down to West Texas. So just, we need more. The other thing it's a little maybe indicative of what we're going to see is of the technician responses to this, 80% were ASC certified in something. So while, don't get me wrong, it's nice to see ASC certification out there, we know the real numbers, right? Of that 800,000 automotive service technicians or mechanics in the United States, roughly 250,000 of them have some ASC certification. So it's a small number, right? When they're heavily involved in these surveys, you start to get numbers that are slightly skewed. I'm not trying to debunk the survey. I really am not. If you're taking it that way, that is not how I'm meaning this. It's just, let's get more and more involved. Let's get more and more people taking this survey. If you're listening to this and you have coworkers who would never think of taking such a survey, let's get them on board. Let's get everybody's input and just shoot straight, you know, just be freaking honest. The first portion here is what technicians want. And I found it very interesting. And they divide it up into phases. And then I guess before I get rolling too much here, this survey is available for free. You can go to the Wrenchway website, and then I think you got to give them your email, and they email you a PDF of it so you can look at this. It's freely available. What technicians and students look for in employers. The overwhelming, I don't know, we'll just say top three. It should be really top two, really. Proper equipment in the shop, 87%. Paid vacation, 83%. Third at 72%. A retirement fund. So how many shops are out there? You know, proper equipment in the shop. I don't know. What does that mean? It hinges a lot on the knowledge level of the tech, right? Meaning if I'm waltzing into a shop that specializes in Toyota and Honda, show me where the GTS Plus is. Do you got one? Do you got two? Or do we get hooked up for that? Where are we sitting with that stuff? You have the Honda factory tool? You know, is that available to us? Or you hook us up with that? Kind of want to see, do you have IHDS? Are we using J boxes? Do you have OE interfaces? What's going on with that? That kind of depends a little bit on the level of the technician, right? A less knowledgeable tech, and that's not a dig, might be ecstatic if the shop had a couple of aftermarket scan tools and never even crossing their mind that programming may be needed or something other than an aftermarket scan tool for doing maybe an immobilizer, or, you know, is the shop into ADOS? And I know I've already just veered straight into the technology side of things because that's my life, but how about, you know, do we have a powertrain table or two? How does that work? Special tools, cam alignment tools. Are we set up for that? These would be the interesting questions. These are the probing questions that maybe an experienced, knowledgeable tech knows to look for. Less knowledgeable, what does it mean to be well-equipped? What does it mean to be properly equipped? Hoists, air compressor, outlets to charge cordless tools, Wi-Fi, which, I mean, it's not bad looking for Wi-Fi, but what does that mean? Proper tooling. Paid vacation, right? We can bust that up a little bit into, and I don't mean bust it up as like bust up the survey. That's not what I mean. This is not critical of the survey, really. Paid vacation, what does that mean? Is that holidays? Is that a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, right? How many of us have more than 2 weeks paid vacation? How many techs do you know out there that have 4 weeks? 5 weeks. And is that a thing? Like, is anyone really looking for that? Are they looking for their 2 weeks paid and then a little bit of freedom to take days off unpaid? What does that mean? It's interesting, right? Because I think we have to face the facts. A lot of professions 2 weeks is a lot of times where they start. And then after, you know, a decade of service, they're looking at 3, 4, 5 weeks of vacation. So that'd be interesting to know what that meant. Retirement. That's interesting. A lot of shops I know do not have any sort of retirement fund, 401k, simple programs, anything like that. So especially young people, if they're not looking for it, they should, because they're the ones that will benefit the most by getting in early. And then we can start dropping percentages of who's looking for it. Paid training came in at 65%. That's actually higher than I thought it would be. Because I don't know about you, but looking around where I live and extending that out. And then honestly, just when you start going to training expos and stuff like that, you see all the same faces. Not all the time. You know, I think Vision's actually pretty good about bringing in new people. But I don't know, man. Like, I just wonder, people like to say they like paid training, but then when it's afforded them, they don't take it. I mean, they don't make use of it. That one is kind of surprising it came up that high. Working no weekends was 50%. So evidently, a fair number of us don't mind working a Saturday here and there, or a Saturday, Sunday. I found that genuinely surprising, because a lot of people I know would pray to have a work, you know, 4-10s so that they can have 3-day weekends. And here we're seeing working weekends. You know, I guess that's a creative leap on my part, that they would be looking to work more than 40 hours or scheduled in such a way that they pick up a weekend, some weekends, then get days off during the week. I don't know. Not enough details there, but it's interesting. We kind of start dropping. Well-documented career path comes in under 40%. That's really for like the must-haves. A lot of people think that would be very nice to have, but need to have, must have, it's not that important. Roughly, you know, a little over the third of respondents. My knee jerk, of course, is what does that mean? And I would think it means more to the younger generation, the entry levels, to know how they're going to get to the, you know, top spots or whatever, the line techs, whatever, full. They want that kind of a career path. Those that are in the Bay full-time, full-blown techs, it makes you wonder if they kind of know the score. Like, if their body breaks down, they better hope they can do a lot of diag. And if they can't, their body breaks down, they're looking for a different career. Or maybe kick around the idea of service advising. I don't know how many shop foreman roles there are where the shop foreman doesn't fix cars or doesn't fix a lot of cars. I don't know about shop manager jobs, or they're not expected to crank out hours. A lot of the shop managers and shop foremans I know are still expected to crank out as many hours as everybody else, if not more than everyone else. And, oh, by the way, help everybody. Those are a lot of the shop managers I know. That's a lot of the shop foremen I know. It's, you know, it just contradicts itself, right? But that's what it is. And I guess I don't want to go through everything step by step, but those are the big ones.
NAPA Auto Tech training sessions are being conducted day and night in a town near you. This training caters to every level within your organization, be it a mechanical assistant, a mechanical specialist, a technology specialist, or a driver safety calibration specialist. Imagine a one-stop shop training partner in NAPA Auto Tech that will lead your team to a path to greatness. Auto Tech's entry-level Build-A-Tech classes convert the untapped potential of your new hires into money-making mechanical specialists. Auto Tech's higher-level tech update classes introduce specialists to the world of ever-changing technologies, which prevents your shop from getting technologically stagnant. Remember, if you're not moving forward, you're falling behind. And, turning to the front of the store, the Auto Tech Service Advisor class is an awesome way to hone your client advocate skill set, ultimately benefiting the customer through an improved vehicle repair experience. But it doesn't stop there. Imagine an electric vehicle class that takes your specialist well past the mundane, yet necessary, safety topics. Well, it's here. Auto Tech's EV Ready Training is a week-long curriculum that takes participants through a hands-on experience involving hybrids and electric vehicles. The session kicks off with the use of PPE and proper tooling while touching on required OSHA regulations. Then, the students dive into the lab vehicles to gain knowledge of the common high-voltage components on EV and hybrid vehicles and their function. Attendees will be taken on a path exposing them to different electric vehicle manufacturers to compare component form and location. Additionally, information about Level 1 and Level 2 charging systems will be included, along with a quick look at DC-to-DC charging. The operation and maintenance of subsystems are explored, including the different modes of Tesla operations, and so much more. So what are you waiting for? Commit to taking your business to the next level with NAPA Autotech Training.
The pay structure. Preferred pay structure. Turns out, it's not overwhelming, but the majority want an hourly or a salary. And then after that, it drops, and it's like 25% are looking for a hourly with some sort of a bonus, production bonus. And then flat rate, of course, comes in under that, not terribly far, where they want flat rate with a 40-hour guarantee. Well, now that seems like hourly with a production bonus, right? And then straight up traditional flat rate comes in at 20%. And that, I find that interesting, right? When I see that people want hourly salary, that just means stability, consistency. And then we'd have to break that down some more. Why? Are they burned out on commission-type plans, be it flat rate or whatever, where maybe the shop wasn't set up so good that it was very difficult to hit numbers consistently, big numbers or good enough numbers? It doesn't always have to be big numbers. It's just enough, right? So you make enough money to pay your bills and save some for a rainy day and maybe retire before you're 80. It could also mean they just aren't fast, right? I mean, that has to be a certain reality, is they're not good at getting the job done in whatever amount of time the shop has, you know, sold the client. And that could be based off of a labor guide, and can all get into the debate about the accuracy of the labor guide. Again, it would be back to the shop, whereas the price is the price and you need to get it done in this amount of time. And you know, if they live in the Rust Belt, sometimes that don't work out so good. So I find that interesting. And many of you know, our shop doesn't really pay production bonuses. Everybody's paid an hourly wage that we hope is, you know, pretty decent. Like, you could pay your bills with it. And then we have profit sharing every month. So now everybody gets a piece of the shop itself doing really well. And yes, depending on where you are in the company, what you're doing, what your role is, determines the best way for you to help make that happen. So yes, if you're, you know, one of our 3-4 line techs, yeah, probably the number one way for you to contribute to that is doing quality work in a very productive manner. But it's also a lot of all the other little things. It's also the Ubuntu, right? Where we're helping our coworkers succeed, I mean, helping them be productive, help the shop itself be productive, help the shop get more repair orders and increase the average repair order as ethically. So anything and anything you can do to help with that, that's the philosophy. Where if you're in a situation where the shop can set you up to really focus on turning out quality work at a very productive manner, then yeah, the flat rate part becomes less daunting, especially if there's certain guarantees attached, where rarely do you ever need to use the guarantee, or of course the hourly with some sort of a production bonus. And I'm assuming the production bonus means what you do yourself, not so much the shop, but we're taking a little bit of a creative leap with that. Work schedules, it looks like it's split between desire for 4-10s or 5-8s. Do have a few in there that are as many as they can get. The vast majority of respondents to do with commuting time, a lot of them are okay with a half an hour to an hour commute. It means each way. So there's people willing to drive an hour each way, 2 hours of their day, just to get to and from work, which maybe has less to do with proximity and more to do with where you live, right? If you live in Chicago, you might only have to go a few miles, but it just takes forever due to traffic. that's something I would hardly ever consider, because a traffic jam around here is you're stuck behind a combine. Of the respondents, you know, agreeing or disagreeing, the shop provides fair compensation. Automotive, up 50% or 57%, feel that their shops provide fair compensation. 62% of diesel techs think that. And I guess I got to say, 62% of the respondents to the survey said this, of which we have, 11%, right? So roughly 470, a little more, just, you know, for firing off numbers. That's kind of interesting, right? The shop provides the adequate equipment. They look like they agree across the board, about 58%. So a lot of us feel we are unequipped or ill-equipped to work on the vehicles we're being asked to service. What does that mean, right? It would be interesting to really get a deep dive in on some of these and read the comments, if they could make comments on that. Like, what do you mean by you're not equipped properly? I would like to know more. And is it something, you know, obviously, I think with that number, shops have to start stepping up, but we might need to know better how. What does that mean? They provide good benefits. About half think that they do. Adequate paid training, about half. How many people would recommend the shop, working at the shop that they're working at, to a friend? 49%. Dude, that's, ouch. Ouch. What does that say? That's a powerful one right there. Shop management communicates well. Everything's in the 30%. Big surprise. Could be a reflection of why the 50% would recommend working at the shop they work at. So that almost answers that. Yeah, shop does a good job of teaching new techs and compensating mentors. Yeah, we're talking sub 30%. I could see that being a big problem, right? Because you're paid on production. Somehow the mentors are the ones making the investment, not the shop, in the young entry-level techs. I shouldn't even say young, but the entry-level techs. It's not even the shop taking the brunt of that investment. They somehow get the experienced techs to shoulder a little bit of that, which is, that's absurd, right? It's completely absurd. The shop helps out local schools. This is pretty pathetic. 25%. That's absolutely pathetic. Why doesn't anyone want to be a mechanic? I can't imagine. Don't want to help the local school? Why would they even know? Oh, man. So, yeah, here, you probably already know the answer to this one. Recommending to be a professional automotive technical specialist or mechanical specialist, how many of you would recommend this to a friend? 64% would be qualified as a detractor. Do not do this for a living. With only about 12% being promoters saying, yes, this is a great field. That's brutal. That hurts. What are we going to do about it? Part of me feels like we're in a really good time period now where the skill gap is so bad. You're starting to see techs starting to get paid decent because they have to. What happens if they leave? But on the flip side, I guess evidently it's not making its way everywhere. Or who aren't we keeping up with, right? If we're comparing ourselves to some other profession. That's pretty interesting. And then, I'll wrap this up with this last bit here. The most urgent issues that need to be addressed. 4,700 respondents. Number one, we need higher pay. 78%. I'm good with higher pay. I'm sure all of us would like more. I'm torn on what that means. One idea when we're talking about pay is I think too often we get caught up in dollars, meaning not so much like where you're at your shop, but when you start talking to people online and you start learning like what they're making, that we start losing track of, I guess, regions, meaning it would be really rough for me to compare my compensation package to somebody that works near Washington, D.C., where the cost of living is absurdly high. Or some people we know maybe in California, where we know the cost of living is way higher than where I live where most of you live. What does that mean then? So what if they're making twice as much as you? Their quality of life is probably less than half as good as yours. Well, what if we start talking in terms of percent of cost of living? And I think that's a scary conversation for shop owners to start thinking about too. What percentage am I paying of cost of living? Because they may feel like they're paying you a lot of money because, I don't know, if they used to work in a shop and they made, you know, in their very, very best years, whatever number you want to conjure, and they're essentially paying you twice that, their ideas are skewed. Their thoughts are skewed. And if they're living in the house they've lived in for 30 years, their thoughts are skewed. They need to start thinking in terms of cost of living. What is the cost of living to live within, you know, a half an hour, evidently an hour in some cases, of where the shop is? And considering that when they're coming up with their pay plans and their compensation packages, because what's the point of the compensation package is really try, I think, I mean, from my perspective, is what can I do to increase your expendable income? And of course, the more you do for me, the longer you've been with me, the more I want that expendable income to increase. So that's how we need to be talking. And for somebody, you know, in location A, wherever that is in the United States, maybe $30 an hour is killing it. But maybe somewhere else, shop B, if you're not making $50 an hour, you might as well just go find a different career because you can't afford to make ends meet. And that's just the reality of it. I don't know that we would necessarily talk in those terms anymore because maybe the $30 an hour person is making, you know, 150% of cost of living, whereas the person making 50% at shop B is making 98% of the cost of living. So less than the cost of living. And those are terms I don't ever hear anyone talk about. It doesn't make any sense. Better pay structure, you know, unfortunately vague, but I guess if anything, these are a lot of ideas worth talking about. What does that mean? What does that mean? Better benefits. What does that mean? Shops pay for tools or provide adequate tool allowances. 14%. Better management. That's pretty vague. 13%. But I guess if we go back, better communication, start, you know, just be open and talk straight. More respect for the industry is about 10%. Shops provide more paid trainings, 9%, and warranty works at 5%. So like I said, this is available on the Wrenchway website and they'll email it to you. But I guess I'd really strongly urge you become a member or join or register with them. It's free. So that you and all your coworkers and as many people and as many techs as you can get to start taking these surveys so that we can get more and more information, better information. If everybody's just on the level, this is a really powerful report. I think there's some really powerful information in here, eye-opening information, painful information to look at. Painful. And what are we going to do about it? And I think the more information we have, the better means we have of changing it, at least as a whole. And then, of course, for those that are owners and managers listening to this, I mean, just freaking asking people in your shop sometimes helps a lot. Don't get me wrong. Everybody wants more pay. Then we have to find ways to achieve that. What does that mean and why? And of course, as somebody that gets a paycheck or really, I guess as an employee, I can spend more money than I make. It would take a lot of money to be able to not be able to spend it all. Be like Brewster's Millions. So that I will leave you with. I really appreciate you guys listening. Thank you so much to Napa Auto Tech Training for sponsoring. And thank you to the Aftermarket Radio Network for making this all possible, especially Tracy. Next time you see her, thank her. And until next time. Take care.
You've been listening to Matt Fonslow, diagnosing the aftermarket A to Z on the Aftermarket Radio Network. Follow Matt on your favorite listening app. He's very interested in what you have to say. Let him know what you'd like him to cover and come on the show. Matt is all for advancing the aftermarket. Find Matt Fonslow on social media and connect, or on aftermarketradionetwork.com.